The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Trigger warning, trigger warning, trigger warning. It's called sarcasm. Okay? Just to get it out there, it's called sarcasm before I take you through this first story. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. Here we go in the National Review. And remember, you know what's happening with me by Friday, right? Right, Snarky Friday. Okay, here we go. In defense of teenage knife fighting. Maybe I shouldn't laugh. Just when I thought that America couldn't possibly get any softer, people start suggesting that there's a role for the police in preventing knife murders. The snowflake generation strikes once again. Is there any tradition that the radicals won't ruin? As the brilliant Bree Newsom pointed out on Twitter, quote, teenagers have been having fights, including knives, for eons, unquote. And now people are calling the cops on them? I ask, is this a self-governing country or not? When Newsom says we do not need police to address these situations by showing up on the scene and using a weapon, she may be expressing a view that is unfashionable these days, but she's right. Disappointingly, my colleague Phil Klein has felt compelled to join the critics. In a post published yesterday, Phil asked in a sarcastic tone whether the police should somehow treat teenage knife fights as they would harmless roughhousing and simply ignore it. My answer to this is, yes, that's exactly what they should do. Yes, even if they are explicitly called to the scene. I don't know where Phil grew up, and this is Charles Cook from the National Review writing, I don't know where Phil grew up, but where I spent my childhood, Fridays were idyllic. We'd play some football, try a little Super Mario Brothers, have a quick knife fight, and then fire up some frozen pizza before bed. And now law enforcement is getting involved? This is political correctness gone mad. It's hypocrisy, too. Who among us hasn't come within a second or two of murdering someone else with a steak knife? My best friend in school, Bobby the Blade Simpson, used to throw shivs at the smaller kids in the music room. Do we need the authorities to step in when that happened? No, we did not. As MSNBC's Joy Reid argued smartly on her show last night, pranks such as these were dealt with by our teachers, just as we all expected that they would be. And if something went wrong, well, that's why we had substitutes. In all honesty, I worry that this sort of helicopter policing is making us weak. Back in my day, the people who survived a good stabbing came out stronger for it. I learned a lot of lessons from my time in the ring, self-reliance, how to overcome fear, the importance of agility, the basics of military field dressing, and given the turnover, I also learned how to make new friends. Today, the free-range generation to which I belong is dying out, and this time it's not from the wounds inflicted by everyday teenage knife fights, but because our politicians and activists simply cannot leave us be. From the time of the Colosseum, our civilization has had a tradition of lightly regulated, highly entertaining combat. Who are we exactly to think we know better? All right, so obviously Charles Cook at the National Review, tongue-in-cheek sarcasm, bashing away on the fact that some of our elected officials were like, why are the police showing up on something like this? And why in the world would you pull a gun? And of course, this is exactly what's been happening. And in Columbus, Ohio, for example, in the since May of last year, there have been five deaths of African-Americans at the hands of police. Now, that's usually how it gets reported. Just like CBS News played a clip from 911, where they left out the part that the young woman who unfortunately was shot and killed in this incident was wielding a knife, and a rather large one if you've seen the video or some of the pictures. But they come out and say five African-Americans have been killed by police, and you go, your first reaction normally would be, oh my gosh, that's terrible. What's going on there? Gosh, really? More of this? But once you start reading the stories and actually get into it, this is our problem. In a highly politicized, highly racially charged environment, the right does its thing. The left does its thing. The race baiters do their thing. And nobody's thinking critically anymore. We just jump to a conclusion and that's the end of it. And you're guilty of it on the right, just like they're guilty of it on the left. And I get guilty of it too. But anymore, this is like, If you have a chef that continually makes you meals, three meals a day, and each one of those meals ends up having something wrong with it, you would think at some point when the chef serves up the next meal, you'd be a little discerning. Like, what kind of garbage is he slipping into this one? Well, that's exactly what's going on with these stories in the mainstream media. So for you and I, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and I sincerely hope you are, through the power of the Holy Spirit in the book of James, we're called to ask for wisdom. Boy, do we need that. But I would also add to that discernment, because we're all being sold a bill of goods all the time, from the right and from the left. Mostly from the left, so from the right. And so when you hear something, if you're an African-American, if you're a Caucasian, whatever you are, and you're particularly sensitive to this issue of what's going on with the police and African-Americans and the racial issue in general, I would just ask you to go beyond the headline. And remember that everybody's working you. Everybody is pushing you in one direction or another. They're trying to get you jacked up, hyped up, all ready to go. If it bleeds, it leads. If it divides, it provides. Wow, I just made that up. So that's the deal. So all of us as Christians, slow to speak. Wow, where have I read this somewhere before? Slow to speak, slow to anger, and quick to listen. This is the exact opposite of how the media plays it and plays you. The media comes in, they're quick to anger, quick to speak, and slow to listen, right? And that's the deal. That's why I just wanted to use this story, because it's preposterous. And by the way, unfortunately, can you imagine the family, that's the foster family of this young woman, and then the cop who had literally only been on the job for like 16 months. And you show up and there's a girl enraged and she's got a good 6-inch blade and her hand is cocked back. She's ready to bury that thing in this other girl. What are you going to do? And just so you know, police are trained to shoot center mass. It's not shoot them in the leg, because if they miss, you got a bullet flying around and you're not trying to hurt anybody else. And what do you do? Well, let's just let it happen. See how bad the knife fight is, or fire into the air. At that point, the girl's hand's cocked back. That knife is coming down. It's a nightmare. And we don't, how often do we stop and think how difficult this job is? And that we should be praying for police. And like I mentioned the other day, most people would agree that, let's say that 10% of the police force nationwide probably shouldn't be employed on Monday for whatever reasons. But I think that's a reasonable number, maybe a little lower, maybe a little higher. But let's just go with 10%. Think about this for a second. There's 750,000 sworn in police officers in the United States of America. If 10% shouldn't be employed on Monday, that's 75,000 police officers. That's a lot. And a lot of room for trouble. But for us as Christians, slow to speak, slow to anger, quick to listen, not so quick to take the bait, which is being sent to us by both sides. Let's be careful. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. That would be an appropriate song. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, for our new lieutenant governor here in North Carolina. North Carolina's first ever African-American lieutenant governor. How did that happen, by the way? Who let this black man ascend to the lieutenant governor's office here in North Carolina? How did that happen in a nation that's just absolutely marinating in its racism? How in the world? Like, who do I need to talk to? How did that happen? You guys have a black lieutenant governor there in North Carolina? Whoa. And that's kind of the South, too. Isn't that amazing? Anyway, Mark loves the Lord. Just great. We've been working on trying to get him on the show. His schedule's crazy. So we'll get that figured out and have him on. But he's going to say whatever he wants to say, which is a beautiful thing about Mark Robinson. And he always gives credit to his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's like one of the first things that comes out of his mouth when he speaks publicly. Well, they, interestingly enough, and this was smart on some Republicans' parts, they got him up to Congress to speak at a meeting about voting integrity. Okay, so this is from redstate.com. North Carolina's first black lieutenant governor, Mark Robinson, triggers Democrats during House hearing on election laws. North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who is the first African-American, tore into Democrats during his opening statement, calling it preposterous and insulting to suggest black Americans weren't capable of understanding how to go about obtaining a valid form of voter ID in order to cast their votes. The sacrifices of our ancestors, this is Mark, sitting there talking to some Republicans and then the Democrats who were in charge of that meeting, The sacrifices of our ancestors so I could have the opportunity to become the first black lieutenant governor in my state, to see a black man sit in the White House, and for millions of us to be leaders in business, athletics, and culture is incredible. Right? I would agree with that. Now, today we hear comparisons of Georgia law compared to Jim Crow, that black voices are being silenced and that black voices are being kept out. How? He said. By fear of a noose or chains? To be fired from work? To be ostracized by their communities? No. A free ID to vote. Let me say that again. A free ID to vote. How absolutely preposterous, he said. Am I to believe that black Americans who have overcome the atrocities of slavery, who were victorious in the civil rights movement, and who now sit in the highest levels of government cannot figure out how to get a free ID to vote? That we need to be coddled by politicians because they don't think we can figure out how to make our voices heard? Are you kidding me? The notion that black people must be protected from a free ID to vote is not just insane, it's insulting. Boom. Yes. Amen. Mark. Just hit the nail on the head. Here he goes again. Just a few days ago, the vice president went and visited the very place I mentioned earlier, the lunch counter in Woolworths, to see the place where history was changed. You know who wasn't invited to be there with her? My good friend and civil rights icon, Clarence Henderson. Clarence has been on this show a couple times before. Absolute hero. But they don't, you know, what's Clarence Henderson's problem? It's not that he's black. It's not that he's old. It's that he's a conservative Republican. That's his problem. Mark went on to say, the person whose picture is in the history books, the person who actually sat in the chair and endured to make sure that black people, black voices were heard, they didn't invite him. You might ask, Mark said, why that is so, and I will tell you plainly, the goal of some individuals in government is not to hear the voices of all black Americans, it's to hear the voices of those that fit their narrative, and ultimately, that help keep one group in power. So let's listen to a little bit of Mark Robinson, not holding back. And a little back and forth with a Republican member there in the chambers, Representative Chip Roy from Texas, who had a little quiz of sorts for Mark Robinson about, well, some of the big issues, racial issues in the history of our country. Okay, so let's play that clip. You ready, Seth? All right, hit it. Let's go.
And the lieutenant governor from North Carolina, if you could help me understand, was the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the United States Constitution passed and moved by Republicans or Democrats?
He said Republicans. Right.
Right. His was mic's the movement not on. Put your microphone on, sir.
That would be Republicans.
Boom.
Was the move for the 64 Civil Rights Act and 65 Voting Rights Act led heavily by Republicans or Democrats?
That would be Republicans.
That would be Republicans.
So as we sit here today, and as we're being accused by many of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle of wanting to somehow perpetuate the Jim Crow South, when in fact what we're trying to do is perpetuate laws that you can believe in that you've so eloquently discussed, do you see any merit in that whatsoever?
Absolutely not. And just if I have a moment just to add something, you know, when you talk about that history is clear who stood on which side at every turn in history. It is clear. It's not even in dispute. And it's not in dispute now. What we want is integrity. We don't want power. We want integrity. We want the right thing to be done. We want to encourage citizens to be responsible. We want to have the best election system in the world. In the world. Third world countries, places like India where the poverty rate is staggering, they have to show that finger when they go vote. It's time that we modernize our election system in this country and stop playing all these silly games based on race. And please, stop using me as a black man as your pawn. Ooh. And yes, I said it, to push your agenda. I'm sick of it. It happened a long time ago in this country, and I'm tired.
Chairman, I would ask that the witness answer
okay.
the question.
And that's when it goes south. They're bickering back and forth because they're so offended. You can turn it off. These white Democrats so offended that this black Republican would dare to speak the truth. Wow. Who fought to abolish slavery? Democrats or Republicans? Republicans. Who was mostly behind the implementation of Jim Crow laws? Democrats. Who started the Ku Klux Klan? Democrats. Which former leader in the U.S. Senate had been a grand wizard in the Ku Klux Klan? That would be Senator Byrd, a Democrat. Who was mostly behind the civil rights legislation and push in the late 1950s and early 60s? That would be Republicans. An inconvenient truth, to quote Al Gore, of history. So Democrats don't really want to talk about anything prior to about 1968. Why? because they were the party of slavery. They were the party of Jim Crow laws. They were the party that wanted to keep black people on the plantation. And I would argue, in many ways, politically speaking, still do. Now, for me to say that, it's just highly offensive and it triggers people, and I have no right to say it, right? But when Mark Robinson and other black conservatives say it, like Bishop Wooden, who's been on the show many, many times, and we're working to get him back on, then it carries some weight. So if you're a conservative African-American woman or man, I would just encourage you to, pray for boldness. We should pray for you. And speak up, because you carry a whole lot more weight, for obvious reasons, than I ever can. And we need you. We need your voice. And the same issue, you know, switch gears a little bit. One of the most challenging things to talk about in the African-American church is the issue of abortion. And a lot of times it's because a disproportionate number of women, black women in the pews, have had abortions. And so nobody wants to bring it up because there's so much pain there. And so we just ignore it. We just don't talk about it. And so people continue to suffer. Moms and dads that made that choice continue to suffer. Babies continue to die at three times their rate. 35-36% of all abortions are African-American babies. And African-Americans make up about 13.5% of the population. And so people just don't speak it up. They don't talk the truth. Well, if we're going to be people of the book, we need to be people of truth. I'm the way, the truth, and the life, Jesus said. No man comes but by me. That's a harsh truth. That's a harsh truth to the Buddhist, to the Muslim. It's a harsh truth to every religion on the planet other than Christianity. Yet, it is the truth. And it's the truth that will set you free. Spiritually, predominantly, but also politically. When we come back, former Congressman Mark Walker is running for U.S. Senate here in North Carolina. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. And you know, every 2 years I go on the air and allegedly break a federal law. Because the federal law, this was the Johnson Amendment passed years ago by LBJ when he was a senator before he ascended to the presidency after Kennedy had been assassinated. This Johnson Amendment allegedly makes it illegal for pastors or anybody with a 501c3 organization that's tax exempt status. So you donate to a church and you can write that off, right? That comes off your taxes. And so the deal was, if you run a 501c3s, i.e. churches, can't endorse candidates, can't do that electioneering stuff. So that's shut down a lot of people who then became afraid to talk about candidates from the pulpit. But actually that law needs to fall. It's only been utilized a couple times in all these years, about 50 years, 60 years of history. And actually, our friends at ADF have pastors that will, every couple of years, it's called Pulpit Freedom Sunday, will take two candidates and will compare them based on the biblical standard and say, based on the Bible, this candidate lines up more with a biblical standard than this one, and therefore you should vote with this one. You should vote this one. And these are pastors of churches, 501c3s. And then they literally record it and mail them to the IRS, essentially daring them to sue them. Because at that so-called law ever gets to the Supreme Court, there's a really good chance it'll fall. And that'll be an interesting day for pastors, because then they would have the right to talk about actual candidates from the pulpit. But would they? Well, I do. That's why I say every 2 years, you can tune in and listen to me break a federal law, because I'll tell you exactly who to vote for, because I can tell you right now who I'm going to vote for, who I think should win the primary and then be a U.S. senator for the great state of North Carolina. And it's my friend, former pastor Mark Walker. Mark Walker, how you doing, buddy?
Steve, I'm doing great, man. I'm always impressed as far as how much you know your stuff, but very glad to be with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I know you're busy traveling like crazy. It was great to see you last weekend at Dan Forrest gathering out in the mountains. That was wonderful. And of course, big news lately. We talked about this when you were in the studio. What's going to happen? Are you going to have primary opponents? And I think we knew you probably would. But then former North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory jumps in just recently. So what was your initial reaction to Pat getting in the race?
You know what? I wasn't overly surprised, because he's been teasing this, even teasing about running against primarying Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest at times. So, and I think he mentioned something about, you know, wanting something to do in his twilight years. So I wasn't overwhelmingly surprised that he actually pulled the trigger. He's got some, you know, establishment friends across the state. And so I think this is something that he decided that he wanted to do.
And so how does that factor into, because this is challenging. I mean, all right, you know, you served three terms in Congress, i.e. you're a politician. We know that politicians generally sooner or later have to speak about their opponents, but there's got to be some tension there, Mark. As a follower of Jesus Christ, somebody that served in the ministry, for me as well, I struggle sometimes when I feel like I have to say negative things about people in office or what have you, but there's some tension there. So how do you handle that? Because it's not like you're only a politician and a former member of Congress and somebody that wants to be one of our senators here in North Carolina. But first and foremost, you're a follower of Jesus Christ. So how do you kind of walk that line? I do not envy you at all.
Well, I think there's a model even in the New Testament that you can still speak truth without personally attacking someone. So, you know, when it comes to Governor McCrory, he's certainly welcome to do this, but this would be his fourth attempt, having won only one time, and that's when Dan Forrest and President Donald Trump and the rest, many different down ballot win. And the other thing that I think that he's going to have to overcome, and I believe President Trump at some point will talk about this, or former president, is why they refused to hire him in the Trump administration. And those are some factors that I don't think are personally attacking, but it is something that I, as the North Carolina voter, would want to know. How would he respond to some of that? And then the other thing is I'm very proud of our record standing up for not just the fiscal conservative aspect of voting against omnibuses and leading on other issues, but specifically as far as what we've done in our battle to stand up for life and our values that we very much cherish and hold dear here in North Carolina.
Yeah, which is why I struggle in conversations with other believers that are willing to give their vote, which I view as a talent, to somebody that's actually pro-abortion. I don't know how your conscience deals with that. I don't know how you get past that. But I know you've got Abby Johnson's been on the show. I was very involved with the promotion and had a chance to visit the set of Unplanned, which is the amazing story of Abby's venture out, how God pulled her out of Planned Parenthood after having been personally involved in about 20,000 abortions herself as the leader and one of the darlings of the Planned Parenthood organization. But you've got an event coming up on May 10th with Abby. They're actually here in the Raleigh area at Beacon Baptist Church. Tell us about that, because I really, really appreciate how you so boldly stand up for the life issue.
Well, it's interesting. It's one of those things that ought to be instinctive. You shouldn't. And when it comes to life, this should not be something, and I've seen it happen even in Washington, D.C., that you have to go out and acquire or learn what the conservative position is on this. This is about a biblical position, and I'm happy to be a warrior for life. And speaking of warriors, Abby Johnson is not the bashful kind when it comes to standing up and fighting for life, if you know anything about her, and I know you do as well. But it also, as you were talking there, it also made me think about, I guess your mom might have told you this, you're known by the friends that you keep.
Yeah.
And the people like Senator Tim Scott, Governor Huckabee, people who have already endorsed us that are helping us, and I'm proud to stand with Abby Johnson and Dr. Pincus and many others who even here locally in Raleigh or even on a national level are unashamed when it comes to standing up for people, all people, born and unborn, that are created in the image of God. And I hearken back to having the opportunity of directly addressing Cecile Richards, and I think I mentioned this one other time when I asked her, does it bother you? I guess one question, Ms. Richards, does it bother you that there are more African-American babies aborted in New York State than actually born? And I think just today we find out there's been another record, a 15-year record, last year when it comes to children that are aborted, babies that are aborted in our minority communities. Yeah. That's something that I'm willing to take on, and I'm proud to partner with Abby on.
Did she, what did Cecil, and Cecil, for those of you that don't know, Cecil Richards used to be the CEO of Planned Parenthood, and her mom, Ann Richards, was the former governor of Texas. How did she react to that question, Mark?
You know, I will never forget it, that sometimes, from time to time, somebody will send me the YouTube clip. She didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah.
You know, she I could tell she thought about questioning the source of it, but she couldn't do that. But we were able just to kind of dial it down and expose the fraud that Planned Parenthood is, specifically in this case, Ms. Richards flying in there on her private jet, you know, making $600,000 or $700,000 a year on a lot of that on taxpayers' dollars. And I just think that's the kind of people that you need to go send to Washington who aren't just going to go along with the flow. But, and listen, I'm not talking about not being Christ-like. you can still speak truth. You can still be a conservative champion and build bridges.
Yeah, there is a way to do it. And then I always ask people, Mark, I mean, who did Jesus hammer? He hammered the big mouth religious Pharisees of the day. And with everybody else, though, and as his teaching got more difficult, the crowds got smaller there towards the end. But yeah, just because you speak a tough truth doesn't mean you're being unChrist-like. I mean, Christ spoke tough truths all the time, and we need to do the same. As we look around the country, Mark, and again, one of the things I appreciate about you is not just your conservatism, but primarily where that flows from, which is your faith. With what we saw with the Derek Chauvin trial, what we've seen going on in Columbus, Ohio, this whole issue of black versus white, people versus the police. I mean, I call it a cold civil war. How do you view what's going on in our nation right now regarding that subject?
I've reached the place where I truly believe race relations in my lifetime are starting to go backwards.
Yeah.
And the question is why? Well, I've been in the bowels of the swamp long enough to know that this ultimately for the radical left is about power and control. The more division that they can create, the more control they have. In fact, they've even used coronavirus for it. Anything that they can get their hands on, as I believe it was the whip from South Carolina there, Mr. Clyburn, talked about, we don't let any crisis go to waste.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing right now, which is not only antithetical to the scriptures, it's antithetical to how we've grown as a country. This is the land of opportunity. I'm not saying that we got it all day right on day one. But what I am saying, the great thing about America is that we never quit trying.
That's right.
And to now to see this flip around to a place where the race is used as a division, where there's literally people this very moment profiting off this division. I have no problems calling these false prophets out, much like we saw and I did the other day with the senator from Georgia. Who basically said, you know, the message of Easter transcends the resurrection of
right.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me? So we have an obligation, kind of following back up on our other point. We have an obligation to call out such false prophets, the religious, political leaders who are leading many communities astray. Because this, and I'll say this, I want every boy and girl to hear this message of conservatism, ultimately, I want them to hear about my Jesus more than anything else.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why God lifts some of us up into a public position where we have to be willing to speak the truth. Mark, I appreciate the fact that you do that. By the way, for those of you that want to interested in the pro-life forum with Abby Johnson, that's on May 10th. Just go to Mark's Facebook page, Mark Walker for Senate. That information is right there under events, and you can sign up there. Mark, thanks as always for your time. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Take care, Steve.
All right, pal. Talk to you soon. We'll be right back. I'm just going to ease on into the fourth segment with a little Steely Dan, because maybe after 5 days of watching Rome burn, we all need to chill out a little bit. So chill out is great, but make sure you're praying. Pray for those in authority over us. By the way, remember that when Paul wrote that to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 2, to pray for those in authority over us so that we can live quiet and peaceable lives. Who was Paul telling Timothy to pray for? He was asking him to pray for, chiefly, Nero. Nero was Caesar at the time when Paul wrote to young Timothy and said, pray for those in authority over us. That would include Nero. Nero, who was an absolute psychotic butcher, a sexual deviant. It's said that he married one of his horses, and he used to use Christians literally as tiki torches. They would impale them, cover them with pitch, and light them on fire in order to light Nero's gardens in the evening. And that's who Paul would say, yeah, pray for Nero. And we all have a lesson from that. Whether you voted for him or not, whether they're in your party or not, we're called to pray for those in authority. One of those people that you can pray for, we just talked to Mark Walker, who's served in Congress and now running for the U.S. Senate. But also our good friend Matthew Winslow, who serves in the North Carolina State House, District 7, which is just northeast of Raleigh. And Matthew, a good friend of the program, a good friend of mine, a brother in Christ. How are you, my friend?
Hey, good afternoon. Doing fantastic, Steve.
Busy, busy guy running Winslow Homes and then also serving in the House. What's that schedule like these days, by the way, Matthew? Because Building homes the way you guys do, it takes a lot. A beautiful product. You take great care of your customers. And then at the same time, you've got to run a business. You have a family. And you're trying to be effective down there in the North Carolina State House. How do you do all that?
I have very, very good people that help me in the background that most people don't ever get to see. So I have been blessed with fantastic people in my life. That's what's made it so easy to do.
Yeah, that's so good to hear, and that's certainly true because I know a lot of those folks, and you're indeed a blessed man. Okay, give us an update because crossover's coming up in the North Carolina legislature soon. That's when bills in the House have to get dealt with, so they're going to get sent over the Senate and vice versa, so there is a bit of a time crunch. But I know you've got an initiative of your own. Let's start with that, talking about voters' rights. Let's start there, and then we'll talk about some of these other hot-button things.
All right, yeah, so that one I'm very excited about. It's actually, believe it or not, it's a bipartisan bill. It's something that during the election, I loved the polling, standing there talking to people as they're coming in, you know, to go vote and getting to meet more people. I really enjoyed that. It was, even though it was 17 days worth. And as they were going in and out, they would ask me questions, and I had no idea. And some would go inside and ask, and they'd come back outside and ask me, and you know, and I'm not the expert on these things, so I started doing some research and realized that information wasn't readily available for the things that people were asking. So I started thinking about this, and then after running and then getting in the office, it kind of stuck in my brain, like, you know, how do we fix this? And I thought, it's real simple. Let's put the information in the hands of the voters very quickly. And so when you go to vote, there'll be a big sign. It'll have some basic information, like during the primary, you vote for your party unless you're unaffiliated. If you're unaffiliated, you choose. During the general election, you can vote for any party you want. It makes no difference whatsoever. It'll have things like what you can use for voter aids when you go in. You can bring sample ballots. You can bring your notebook, notepad, that kind of thing. And also have the best part about it, my favorite, is it's going to have a QR code, a website, and a phone number. And the QR code and the website will take you to the Board of Elections website. It'll have the top. Frequently most asked questions. It'll have a direct link to the laws if you want to investigate yourself. And the 800 number is going to be manned from the entire time that the polls are open until 30 minutes afterwards. And then that way, if you see something or you have any questions or you're not sure about something, you can call and report or ask those questions to someone there at the Board of Elections.
And that's such an important aspect of it, because I think increasingly more of us are becoming more sensitive to what's going on out there at a polling place. And most people, as you said, Matthew, do not know the laws. They don't know the rules. But if they see something, most of the time they just go, oh, that figures. And then nothing ever gets reported. There's no accountability, no follow-up whatsoever. So I love that, because we're all, even us older folks, are getting used to the whole QR code thing. Yeah, take a picture of it on your phone and it opens up a website for you. Man, that's so important that we need to have voter integrity and voting integrity, which would include all of us. It reminds me of after 9/11, all of a sudden we're all paying a lot more attention to what's going on in public. And when it comes to the voting situation, obviously, we need to do the same. So that one's a bipartisan. You've got bipartisan support on that. Is that what you said?
Absolutely. I got the chair of the elections committee on it with me, a Republican. And then I got Allison Dahl and Representative Hawkins on there, the two Democrats. And so, Steve, I mean, for me, it's real simple. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. So if I could get information into the voters' hands as quick as possible and they have it readily available, that right there will help clean up and make do a lot of good and help people find that, you know what, the system here, I have information so I can make my own decision rather than relying on someone to tell me something.
Yeah, because when you're out there, I mean, I pay attention now because we know it's bad and getting worse. And so I think one of the other things we need education on is Jay Delancey is a friend of mine who works with Voter Integrity Project. I mean, here locally, it's not the big national one, which is a whack job organization, but Jay's great. But most people don't even know what to look for. So I think that would be important to educate everybody. Okay, what are some things that we should be a little thinking are a little fishy when we're out there? But that's all part of the process. Like you said, light is the best disinfectant. And we definitely need to be doing that more and more each election cycle. So there's that. Of course, we talked last time you were on the show, Matthew, and people are continuing to talk about vaccine passports. And I know that Governor Cooper has bantered that around. So where are we at on that one? Should we be worried about vaccine passports in North Carolina?
I don't think so. if we try to pass something, we all know that we have to have enough Democrats to override a veto. And so a lot of people ask me those questions. Well, some of the big hot issues, you know, how are you going to make things happen? And so vaccine passports is one of them. And the truth of the matter is it takes the voters contacting the governor's office and saying, we're not going to stand for it. And I think there's enough pressure on it that's not going to move forward. He made that one notice, and that's all we've heard about it ever since then, and I don't see it moving forward. We haven't heard any information back. We just heard him just say that, hey, it looks like June 1st they're going to open the state back up. But really it's going to take the voters contacting his office to make sure that, hey, look, we're not interested in this. It's not something the state's interested in. Plus, the CDC and WHO have come out and said vaccine passports are something that is unfair and it's not viable for poor populations because they may not have access to the same resources other people have. And so, you know, if you put it digital on your phone, a lot of people don't have smartphones and those kind of things. So there's a lot of issues that are going to prevent us from moving in that direction.
Yeah, because the challenge right now is you guys can pass legislation. Cooper can veto it, and you don't have a supermajority, so you can't override a veto. Is that a big issue coming into the elections for next year to try to get a supermajority back in the North Carolina House and the North Carolina Senate?
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest issues, Steve. I think as voters, we should be concentrating on what our goals are. You know, it'll be a midterm election. It's a great opportunity to move some seats into the House so we can get more House and also in the Senate because it's not just the House. We have to have a veto-proof majority, and we also have it in the Senate. So that's something that we should focus on. And so if you feel like you're in a very safe district as a voter, what you should do is be spending time in some of the tighter races and spending time over there and helping those candidates get elected.
Yeah, such an important point. Anything going on down there? Because I know you've been supportive and involved with the issue of life. We were talking to Congressman Mark Walker, about that. Any issues down in the legislature that the conservatives are trying to work on with respect to the life issue?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So one of the ones I really like they've got in there now, they've pushed through three or four, I can't remember how many, but one of the biggest ones is the heartbeat bill. They made that to the legislature down in South Carolina. And we are working on the same thing in the House to move to the Senate. I really like that bill because, it helps move the needle, move the line on what we consider is appropriate. Me personally, I don't think there should be any case, that we should have an abortion. It's a child. It's a separate DNA human being. You know, you've got the mom. I won't get too graphic, but you got the mom and the dad both, give about 3.5 billion genomes each one cell, and that one cell now becomes a unique DNA from there and forever. It never needs any more DNA added to it. And after that, all you need is air, water, and nutrition, and it's a human being.
Okay.
So you and I both agree on that. So I have some people say, why don't you just ban it altogether? Well, remember, politics is strategy, and what you have to do is you kind of have to move things in time. And that's part of the strategy of moving it down the line.
Yeah, and that's a challenge that we struggle with in the pro-life movement nationwide, that some people are no exceptions whatsoever. You don't ever compromise on anything. And I absolutely appreciate where they're coming from and understand where they're coming from. But then you have to deal with the realities of what it takes to move things through a legislature. That heartbeat bill, by the way, for everybody, you get a detectable heartbeat in a baby at 5, 6, 7 weeks at the latest. But it's as early as 5 and 6 weeks you can get a detectable heartbeat. A heartbeat bill just says as soon as you can detect a heartbeat, you can't do an abortion. Now, you know, because you know, Matthew, you've studied this. I know it myself. At the moment of conception, atheistic liberal biologists around the world will tell you that is a human being at the moment of conception. All the DNA you'll ever get, Matthew, all the DNA you have right now, all the DNA I have right now, we got at conception. That's not animal DNA. It's not blob DNA. It's human DNA. So we need to fight for those lives. But sometimes we have to take incremental steps, and we certainly appreciate, Matthew, that you're down doing that. God bless you, brother. We're going to keep praying for you. We'll have you on the show regularly so you can keep us in the know, and we'll get you back as much as we can.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, pal. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon. That was Matthew Winslow, North Carolina District 7 in the House. Be praying for all of them. Pray1Tim2.org is a website where you can sign up for that. Pray1Tim2.org. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.